Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots, this is the voice of the American Redoubt, and this is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I'm your host, John Jacob Schmidt, proud to be your host. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. This is one of my favorite weeks, favorite holidays ever. I love it, and I hope you guys are having a blessed week. I hope that you are finding many things that you can be thankful for. I trust that you are, and we do have many things to be thankful for. One of the things we are so thankful for is the blessing of this nation and the liberties that we have been given by our Creator, and we love them so much we're willing to defend them. Right? That's why we're here. That's why we are remaining eternally vigilant against those who would creep in and try to rob us of our heritage and our national identity, what it means to be an American. Nationalism. It's a good word. I love that word. This is episode 1841. And there are some things that I want to talk about in the next couple of segments. And then in the fourth segment, I want to dedicate it to Thanksgiving. Don't forget to tell your friends who might have limited bandwidth, they can call in and listen, or you can, if that's the way that you prefer to listen to Radio Free Redoubt. You can call on our Stream Monster phone number, and that is area code 857-757-1085. And then go to radiofreeredoubt.com and click on the Listen to RFR tab to look at all of the different ways that you can listen to our shows when we are streaming, or when we're on the air, or listen to archived shows on our Podbean site. All right. Oh, also, before I go any further, the announcement, the Red Ryder BB Gun Christmas Dream giveaway. We've got the rifle, limited edition rifle from the Daisy Museum. And we will be giving another one away. So be checking Radio Free Redoubt this week. I'm almost done with the video that I was hoping to get done today and post it so I could tell you about, just go to the video, but it's not quite ready. And it was either finish the video or work on the show. So, well, I got to be here for you guys every Sunday night, right? Now, that reminds me also, I'm going to be with family and I'm going to be tied up. So I will probably not be able to produce a show next Sunday. I will probably re-air this one, the Thanksgiving show, or at least stream that. I will let you guys know if we're going to do it. If I am able to do a show, then I will. So just check on next Sunday evening, check the website, and we'll make an announcement either way. If I'm not able to, and I do have to do a encore presentation, I'll probably just air this one because it'll be timely, talking about Thanksgiving. All right, now let's get into the news and commentary, brought to you by the author Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse or partial collapse in America and the rebuilding. Go to 299days.com to learn more. All right. First off, there's this headline here out of the UK at the Daily Star. Putin reopening Soviet-era military bases on Cuba as Trump ramps up nuke threat. Russia is reactivating a Soviet-era signals intelligence base in Cuba, and experts think even more could open to increase its surveillance on the U.S. Concern has been raised among the West that the plans are Russian retaliation after the U.S. announced it was pulling out of the bilateral intermediate range nuclear forces INF treaty. Okay, first of all, they never stopped spying on us. B, this is showmanship. This is not even a real news story because they don't need a signals intelligence base in Cuba to be listening in on the United States, because they've got plenty of operatives all over the United States inside our borders anyway. So don't get riled up about this. It's same old business as usual. All right. So they never stopped spying. They're going to continue to. Interesting what's going on over in Europe. They've created their own chaos. Now France is calling for Europe to become a powerful new empire to rival the USA. Good luck. We'll see how that works out for you. Especially since France, you don't even have, it's not even France anymore. It's North Arabia now. So you're not going to be around long enough to really be a problem anyway, except, well, what will be is the Muslims that are taking over France. They will have a powerful new empire that will rival the U.S. And it's all thanks to you, France, for helping to lead the way. Now, something on a more serious note here, I was speaking with Simon Roche, my liaison to the Sidelanders in South Africa. They've had some alarming news and developments taking place toward this. Essentially a Holocaust where whites have been told their land is going to be taken, they're going to be killed, and there's going to be a war. So we're working with them, supporting them. Once again, it's a minority group of people that are being targeted for annihilation. So here's this article here. South Africa and the leaders of Sidelanders have been having emergency meetings lately because of these developments. But in this article here, South Africa white farmer land grabs will be law after the change to the constitution is approved. South Africa is gearing up to carry out a controversial land redistribution without compensation, after plans to change the country's constitution were approved. After months of talks, the country is set to go ahead with the proposals that will see farms seized without compensation, specifically seized from white farmers because of the color of their skin. The country's president, Cyril Ramaphosa, has been attempting to amend the South Africa's constitution for months, but it's been met with stiff opposition. Well, now the controversial seizures will become legal after the changes were approved by a parliamentary review committee. And they said, South Africans have spoken loud and clear, and we listen to their cry. Wow. So taking the land is unconstitutional. Well, let's just change the constitution. It's another good reason why not to have a constitutional convention in the United States, because when people today start touching that document, bad things are going to happen. Well, critics of the plans have previously warned the land seizures will lead to mass starvation and riots. Just look north to Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia. It's exact word. It's just instant replay. Now, Ian Cameron of the South African trade group Afroforum previously warned we're really headed for a state of anarchy if something doesn't change drastically. He says he's convinced this year we'll see between 21,000 to 22,000 people having been murdered in the past year. So he said it will cause large-scale damage, and absolutely, I agree with his assessment. Really scary stuff that we're seeing happen over there. Something I'm going to be covering in the upcoming segments, talking about more confiscations being planned by Democrats. It's interesting. Somebody posted over at theamericanthinker.com talking about what caused the pogrom of 1938. And we talked about that last week with Kristallnacht. And I think somebody rightly pointed out, things very insightful. They said the end game is that straight white conservative males are the new Jew. And this is what's in store. And then, of course, that's when they referred over to this American Thinker article about the true cause of the pogrom of 1938. Very interesting. Now, news inside the American Redoubt. Redoubt News has some good articles over there. One is Globalism is Treason Against Your Country. Amen. Globalism is treason against your country because, well, Americanism has to be set aside. Our Constitution is in conflict with globalism. So for them to advance globalism, they have to essentially destroy the foundation of Americanism, and that's our Constitution. Even though they're going to lie and say, no, you'll be able to keep your Constitution. Well, we've heard that before, and we've heard them say, you can keep Americanism. We're just going to bring in globalism as well. And it's not going to happen. Good article. Globalism is treason against your country. Also, another op-ed piece that was posted over there, and I wasn't aware of this, transgender bathrooms in Priest River. Now, that didn't get passed. Priest River is a small logging town with a logging mill on the Pendere River up near Sandpoint, Idaho. But they're pleading for people to please attend the next Wednesday school board meeting on November 21st at 6 p.m. And I'll just read this real quick here. So many showed up at the school board meeting that the board did not pass that transgender bathroom policy. But they ask, what about human rights clubs in our high school? Human rights clubs. What a charade. Human rights clubs. Well, really, are essentially LGBTQ and whatever else clubs. We're not sure what the Q is. It's queer or whether it's questioning or what. I think that's what it is. This is what this person's asking. I'm pretty sure it's they say it's queer. They say that that's what they are and they're proud of it. So I think that's what the Q stands for, but you never know. These people are so confused that they confuse us. Even more disturbing is that it seems that the public is not allowed to sit in on these club meetings. This is happening right now at Lamana High in Priest River under the guise of, quote unquote, the importance of values of being a good human being that is respectful to all in order to progress society peacefully. Yes, folks. The adversary is hard at work, even in the American redoubt. Thank God they are heavily outnumbered and surrounded by God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots, who, many of whom, I should say, aren't paying attention because they're so bloody free here and it's so wonderful that they disengage from the fight. You've got to. How did this school board ever get elected? Every one of them needs to go. Who allows this stuff? So this person goes on to say, I inquired if parental permission was required to join their club, and she didn't get an answer. No answer. When asked if I could sit in on a class, I was told that the community was not allowed. What are they hiding? So again, the plea is for residents in that area or within driving distance. Even if your kid doesn't attend that school, I would love to see, you know, a huge pushback. That's Wednesday, November 21st at 6 p.m. at the administrative office on 134 Main Street in Priest River. There you go. Now, other great news in the American Redoubt. Here's a headline. Washington police chief proposes the Second Amendment sanctuary city law to be applied toward none other than Republic Washington. So initiative 1639 won nearly 60% of the vote in the state, but most of that came from counties west of the Cascades. So it was overwhelmingly rejected by all but two eastern Washington counties, including Ferry County, which is where this police chief is he's the chief of police in this town of Republic. About 1,100 people in this town. And he says, my officers are not going to be enforcing these laws. They're unconstitutional. So this is what it says. He says, it is an initiative that totally tramples on the rights of the citizens, mostly in the 18 to 21-year-old range, but it also requires people to submit to invasion of their privacy through their medical records. It's totally against my oath of office, which is to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Washington State, and I will not enforce it. So they're also pushing for Republic Washington, or I should say Republic Liberty, to become a Second Amendment sanctuary city. Now, that same proposal is actually on the table for discussion in Spokane Valley. I thought that they had recently passed it, but I spoke with one of the former city councilmen of Spokane County, Caleb Collier. He's also got a show on KTW as well. It comes on right before Radio Free Redoubt Saturday mornings. He said no, it's on the table for discussion, but they thought it wasn't necessary since so much of the I-594 got overturned. They decided, well, we don't need to pursue this Second Amendment sanctuary city thing anymore. Well, I suspect that's going to be back on the table of discussion for them. And I hope it starts a brush fire. Here's something really interesting in Coeur d'Alene. Coeur d'Alene, the heart of the American Redoubt, it's in North Idaho. There's some leftists who have taken control of the city. And they're trying to express to the rest of the world how progressive they are. And in this IdahoBusinessReview.com article that was forwarded to me, they're talking about Idaho is the Idaho's startup hub for startup businesses. Turns out to be Coeur d'Alene. So they're saying, well, how wonderful it is, all these small business startups, especially tech and robotics, amazingly enough, are coming out of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. But here's something that was keyed in on. And I'll read just a little bit of it here. That's according to the Brookings Institution, which recently examined the Inc. 5000 list of startups nationwide. Brookings looked at the cities with the fastest growth and made geographic conclusions, such as how many startups were in each city and the startup density for each city by dividing the number of startups by the population. So they're saying, how did Coeur d'Alene do it? Well, they decided to focus on artificial intelligence and robotics. Okay, that's what this guy Cochran says. Well, Cochran apparently, I don't know how he plays into this. Anyway, I think he's from Starship Technologies. It's an Estonia-based robot delivery company founded by two of the co-founders of Skype. Accordingly, tested its products in Coeur d'Alene. So this is what he says. Included in here. In addition, Coeur d'Alene passed an ordinance that made it the first city in the world to allow the public free use of robots on any piece of public property with the same rights as human beings. Did you catch this? This is where artificial intelligence and robotics is going, where they're going to be recognized as personhood. They're going to be granted personhood, and a lot of people have been calling for this. Oh, that's ridiculous. You've been watching too many Star Trek movies. Well, here we are, the first city in the world to pass an ordinance for the full use of robots with artificial intelligence on any piece of public property with the same rights as human beings. So I don't even know how to, I have no further comment. I'm just gobsmacked. Unbelievable. Well, let's go to this. One of my favorite, rhinopack.org. That's the Rhino Hunters of the Inland Northwest Political Action Committee. I like these guys. Before I get to the stark raving mad articles, stories, I keyed in, just so you know a little bit more about them. On their, you know, About Us page, it says, we embody the soul of the Inland Northwest. I would call it the American Redoubt. They say, we are passionately devoted to the concepts of maximizing freedom, individual responsibility, and limited government. We are not traditional Republicans. We are not traditional libertarians, although we wish them a lot of luck. We are not Nazis, racist, homophobes, or Islamophobes, although we expect to be accused of all that. Perhaps what we can be best described as traditional conservatives, what we believe. So anyway, good stuff. Check them out if you get a chance. And that's at rhinopack.org, R-H-I-N-O, just like the animal, and then P-A-C, as in Political Action Committee, rhinopack.org. Okay, so what they've keyed in on for their stories in the Stark Raving Mad section, Idaho going cold, 15 November 2018, so just this week. Something environmental wackos have trouble with is the fact that when the sun comes up in the morning, the earth quickly warms 20 or more degrees. When the sun sets in the evening, the earth swiftly cools. I'm not talking half degrees over 100 years like in Enviro fruitcakes pretend to worry about, but dozens of degrees over the span of a few hours. The radiation or the heat produced by the sun is greatly influenced by the number and magnitude of solar storms, the things we call sunspots. The number and intensity of these storms conform to an approximate 11-year cycle. When there are lots of sunspots, the Earth tends to warm. When there are few, the Earth tends to cool. These 11-year sun cycles are themselves embedded in a much longer cycle. Right now, we are entering the low point of both the 11-year cycle and the long multi-century cycle. The sun, during 2018, has been almost entirely devoid of sunspots. The last time this happened was between 1645 to 1715, in the year of our Lord, Anno Domini. So, a time known as the Maunder Minimum. During that time, a mini ice age commenced. Crops failed and famine became common. Bundle up, folks. This winter could be interesting. Okay, I'm glad that they brought this up because we've, as ham radio, radio operators, HF particularly, we're seeing the effects of this. And it has really changed. It's made the band conditions very strange. And it's a lack of solar activity, which also tends to lead a cooling trend, like cooling on Earth where we live. And so now you've got these environmentalists coming out with articles that I've seen this week saying scientists are reevaluating and looking at the new numbers, and they're saying we could be headed into a mini ice age. And so, of course, once again, it's the environment. It all goes back to the environment, climate change. And it's all our fault for being humans. And we're causing all of it. Well, you know, it's probably about 7.5 billion of us need to go because it's just not, Earth isn't sustaining us. That's the lie. Aliens are arriving at the border. The first wave of the migrant invasion arrived by bus on the 13th of November this week in Tijuana, Mexico. On the California-Mexican border, an advance party of 400 from the first caravan, quote-unquote caravan, totaling nearly 10,000, is being welcomed by Democrats as the stalwart supporters who will finally put an end to right-wing extremism and white privilege. They truly cannot vote. Hold on. That they cannot vote is nonsense. Illegals just finished voting in massive numbers in the Democratic strongholds of South Florida. Many of their ballots were marked provisional and set aside. But Democrat socialist gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum openly called for the counting of illegal alien ballots, I'll bet. And the previous president, who will not be named, appointed judge, has decreed that all ballots must be counted now. Laws are so yesterday. To Democrats, they are more like guidelines anyway. So they say here, my friends, you're witnessing history. This is how a republic dies. We've been saying it. All right, segment two, when we come back, we're going to talk about gun control and some of the plans that they have that they hope to implement and some of the things they're already working toward. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there.
Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message.
In the schools, textbooks are rewritten to tell the communist version of
history. Every day, every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have
to change the meaning of words like religion and duty and democracy. The communists set out to brainwash the people.
Do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
14-year-old Polish children learn from textbooks like these.
We're back with segment two here at the Voice of the American Redoubt, streaming from the Free Zones here at Studio A at the heart of Patriot Territory in the American Redoubt. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, helping patriots like you get strategically relocated to the panhandle of North Idaho if that's where you've got your sights set. Check them out at SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. All right. The Second Amendment continues to be under attack. This is not news. This isn't news, but I'm not trying to claim that this is news, but these are the most recent developments in the campaign to disarm peaceful citizens. It is a lie that they just want to disarm criminals. They really want to remove everybody's ability to protect life, liberty, and property. So the AP News has got an article here. Democrats promise congressional action on gun control. Newly ascendant Democrats are promising congressional action on gun control amid a rash of mass shootings, including a late-night assault at a California bar that killed 12 people. Measures include expanded background checks and a ban on assault-style weapons are likely to reach the House floor when Democrats retake control after 8 years of Republican rule. Yeah, and I would say rhino rule, because Republicans didn't do squat for us. Except placating the left, or placating to the left. I got two paragraphs here. The American people deserve real action to end the daily epidemic of gun violence that is stealing the lives of our children on campuses, in places of worship, and on our streets, said Representative Nancy Pelosi of California, naturally. The Democratic leader who is running for us, Pelosi vowed to push for a range of actions to stem gun violence, including restrictions on high-capacity magazines, which is just standard capacity, and a measure allowing temporary removal of guns from people deemed an imminent risk to themselves or others. Hold on, right there. Allowing a temporary removal of guns for people deemed an imminent risk to themselves or others. First of all, temporary is a very subjective word. And also, removal of guns, these measures that allow for this are basically measures to subvert the Constitution. What they're saying is, we're going to create exceptions to your constitutionally protected rights of search and seizure and Second Amendment and on and on. And here's the other thing, too. From people deemed an imminent risk. So deemed by whom? And by what standard are they deemed an imminent risk to themselves or others? Now, we're all adults here. We understand when somebody is obviously going to hurt themselves or someone else. But this sick society that we have, they're going to use this and they're going to twist this, as we all know. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. We know that. But they're not holding back. They are going to... Let me go on to this next article here talking about this. First, it will hit the background checks. And after that's established, it will be red flags for all. And then we're talking about red flag laws. This is what they're trying... They found the the holy grail of tools to disarm people, and that is people deemed an imminent risk. It could be anyone who just says, I think that person's a risk. And that could include haters. It could extremists. People have extreme views. They need to be disarmed. The narrative is already being set. Remember what I said. When a society, especially the institutions of a society, are preparing for the annihilation of a group of people, they start by marginalizing them, and then demonization comes, and then criminalization, incarceration, and then extermination. And there's another one in there, and that's litigation, where they can just sue the pants off of you to harm you financially. There's an article here, lawmakers draft a bill to screen gun buyers' social media history for hate speech. A pair of New York legislators is drafting a bill that would make social media history checks part of the process of purchasing a gun. Under the legislation, gun purchasers would have up to 3 years of their social media history potentially scrutinized by authorities, New York outlet WCBS News Radio reports. So, the internet search history of prospective gun buyers would face searches going back up to 1 year. A 3-year review of social media profile would give an easy profile of a person who is not suitable to hold and possess firearms. Once again, based on what standard? And who are the people who gets to determine whether a person is not suitable to hold and possess firearms? And this is being said by a Brooklyn Borough President, Eric Adams, who has proposed the legislation with New York State Senator Kevin Parker. Adams described the searches, which would involve scouring social media posts for hate speech, as basic police work. So what we're looking for here is hate speech. And we know how broad that is, what a large umbrella that is, that covers so-called hate speech. So anybody saying, hey, I think we should vet immigrants coming from nation states who are raising up jihadi terrorists so we can fully understand who these people are. That's hate speech. It's Islamophobia, and that's hate speech. So essentially, here comes, and this is what I was talking about before. You're going to have they're going to have to create a social credit scoring system. A social credit scoring system is coming, and they're going to use social media for it, and they're going to use hate speech is going to be one of the primary criteria to determine a number of things. Not just whether or not you can own a firearm, but maybe even what your insurance rates might be, or whether or not you can get a loan. How many banks now are dropping businesses, closing businesses' accounts that are firearms-related businesses? Right, they're not enforcing any law. This is the private sector partnering with those in the government who are attempting to disarm people and harm the firearms industry. So, if the police department is reviewing a gang assault, a robbery, some type of shooting, they go and do a social media profile investigation. Yes, if somebody's suspected of a crime. And I have to remind you all that social media, they're not violating any constitutional protected rights, any God-given rights, by looking on social media. I think people are so dumb, they say the dumbest things on social media. They express their intent on social media. I have no problems with the police looking at social media. It is OSINT. It's open source intelligence. It does not require any one of us can go and do a social media search on somebody to find out what their views are. But this hate speech catch-all, that is what they are going to use as the standard, and they get to define what hate is. I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit. To deny someone a fundamental right based on the state's interpretation of hate speech, and that's what's going to come from the state's interpretation, it would be an affront to constitutional principles. That's where we're stepping over the line with this thinking. Additionally, there's the issue of defining hate speech, a notoriously nebulous term. And of course, like I said, who gets to define that? The same people that are going to be defining what hate is are also the same people that are redefining what a marriage is. They're the same people that are redefining what a male or a female is, for that matter. And they're going to define what hate is, and they are going to be the great arbiters, those who have demonstrated streaks of wickedness, really, to determine whether or not you or I shoot on a firearm because of any of your views that they want to call hate. By the way, I would argue that you have a constitutionally protected right to hate any person for any reason. Now, it's unchristian, but you have the liberty to hate people. Where the line is crossed is when you take action and harm somebody just because you hate the color of their skin, or you hate the kind of car they drive, or you see somebody driving a Prius and you want to run them off the road because you know they're a tree hugger, right? You can't do that. But you should have the right to love or hate whomever or whatever you want, but not in today's society. But that brings us to another point here. This last week, this was sent to me, talking about these red flag laws. Maryland police kill a 60-year-old man who resisted a gun confiscation by a recently enacted ERPO. That's your emergency red flag. Basically, it's to remove it's a protective order. Okay. So these red flag laws. If somebody calls and says, I think this guy's dangerous. He has dangerous views. He said something hateful on the internet. I think he's a danger. Now, without due process, that's the problem right here. There are some people that they should not have a firearm, but there also should be due process. It is their natural God-given right to defend themselves and a constitutional right to keep and bear arms, especially if they are a moral, righteous, law-abiding citizen. And I don't mean law. When I say law abiding, I mean people that are following the laws of the land. Not talking about the criminals that the Democrats are attempting to create out of whole cloth simply by the stroke of a pen and creating tens of thousands of criminals. Like the public got duped into passing this I-1639 over in Washington State, instantly making thousands of people potential criminals at the stroke of a pen, law-abiding citizens, upright people. But there was one of the first known deaths now, fatalities, from one of these red flag orders. Somebody saying somebody is dangerous and shouldn't have a gun. Well, the family here in this case, this Gary Willis, 60 years old, answered his door with a gun in his hand. The police came to effect this order. He had initially put the gun down next to the door. Then he became irate when officers began to serve him with the order, "We're here to take your guns." And he opened the door and picked up the gun again. Of course, that's a huge tactical error. But the family members are saying this was there was a fight last night that centered around the care of an elderly family member that led them to contact police. Gary Willis struggles with alcoholism. The family say he was not dangerous, just strongly opinionated. So even the family saying this guy was not a danger, not in the sense that he should have his guns taken from him. Well, a fight ensued. The police shot him and he's dead. Over the disarming of a citizen without due process. Just simply at somebody's word. And how many times have we seen, we've seen videos, YouTube videos, people, just a guy standing there with a pistol on his hip at a cash register, at a checkout stand, and somebody flipping him a bunch of crap saying, I feel very uncomfortable. I feel unsafe with you having that gun. Why are you wearing that gun? You're not a police officer. Why? I feel very unsafe. I feel like we're in danger. You know, because they're ignorant morons, really. I don't know how else to put it. So somebody feels uncomfortable or unsafe. Without due process, they can come and disarm somebody. That is a very dangerous trend, especially when they are seizing upon this new trend by using social media, protected, constitutionally protected, natural right to speak your views on anything, as long as you're not promoting the harming of other people or acting on those threats to harm other people. You should have any view that you want. But constitutionally protected rights to, you know, freedom of expression only works one way, and that's if it fits the globalist, leftist, communist, Marxist, anti-Christian narrative. But see, here's another story here that I keyed in on. So here's another side to this. The FBI works to lock up a Michigan man believed to be mass shooting threat despite no serious crimes. Now, some patriots sent this to me, and somebody's very upset. This actually led to a very spirited debate between myself and my friend, Chris Ann Hall, and a couple of others. Because Chris Ann Hall is a strict libertarian, right? So in this case, I believe that the FBI got the right man at the right time this time. The FBI did not just go and say, we think you're a threat. We're here to take your firearms just because a family member said you might be dangerous. What happened with this guy is he's 25 years old. He just purchased with a credit card, just purchased several what they call assault rifles. So he purchased some combat rifles. No problem. It's perfectly legal. And well, every American free man should own one anyway. Semi-automatic handguns and so on. But see, this is what happened. He gets on Facebook. He gets on social media. And he starts ranting and raving about hating the world. Where are we at here? The defendant starts posting about his dissatisfaction with the community around him, about how people have completely destroyed his soul and annihilated his conscience. He talks about being angry and blankety blank hating the world. The defendant says the Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh makes a lot of sense, and that the Virginia Tech shooter had a way with words. And he describes the Las Vegas shooter as a hero and a badass. He's talking about African Americans doing harm to them. He mentions that he has a expletive list, a poop list, and that black people are at the top of that list. Then he's doing searches, internet searches, on mass shootings. He searched the Pulse nightclub attack in Orlando. Then immediately he searched Ann Arbor nightclubs in his local area. He searched Columbine High School, and then immediately searched the Howell, Michigan High School, his local high school. He also did internet searches on how long do police take to respond to an active shooter. He started studying police responses to active shootings. He also searched, can social rejection lead you to kill somebody? So if there was ever red flags about somebody who's about ready to go uncorked, this is the guy. There's all the indicators there, but it's on social media. And the media went to the guy's house and interviewed him. He agreed, and he stood in the doorway and answered their questions. They said, are you a danger? No. Well, they took his guns away because they got him on the only thing they could get him on, and that is lying on the credit card application that he used, apparently, to apply for the credit card that he used to buy all these firearms. But he lied. He deliberately lied about something on there, which apparently is a crime, which nobody ever gets prosecuted for. But they used this law to prosecute him, and it was a felony, which that felony led him to losing all of his firearms. So they kind of did a backdoor route to get to this guy because they know this guy is about ready to go off. So this is where the debate came. Did they use... I don't know all the details. I don't know if they... there's nothing to indicate that they used... that they violated the due process of law. For me, this was good investigative work. This is good detective work. This is good police work here. This is preventative. This is good intelligence work, in my opinion. This guy was... I'm convinced the next, if this information is accurate, and there are transcripts from the court, and he admitted it, he said, yeah, I shouldn't have said those things on social media. That was dumb. Did you mean those things? Oh, no. So now we have this conundrum going on. Now, there has to be due process. I have no problems with somebody like this being disarmed because it's any reasonable person knows this is going to be probably our next mass shooter. He's prepping for it. He's researching it. Danger. And anybody, I think you'd be demonstrating massive irresponsibility if you did not at least confront this guy. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, buddy, what's going on inside your head? What are you planning to do? Talk to us, because this ain't looking good. I have no problem with that. But anyway, this it goes back to this, and they're using this new tool, hate, to determine whether or not you should be able to legally even purchase or own a firearm, or even to use that to disarm people. That's a problem. But see, we have departed so much from our faith. We've created this bed that we have to lay in. John Adams said in this letter to the leaders of the militia, he said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate to the government of any other. That was not a letter to the government. That was not directed at the government. That was to the people. It was made for governing a moral and religious people. If we step away from that, the Constitution is useless because we can no longer govern ourselves. You're either going to be ruled by God or by the bayonet, by the Bible or the bayonet, by God or by government. So if we can rule ourselves as godly people and consider ourselves slaves of Christ, being ruled by Christ, we don't need these laws. It's like I mentioned yesterday. But we've got a problem. Anyway, we got more coming up. Segment 3, Democrat saying, you guys don't want to give up your guns? No problem. We've got nukes. So we'll see where this escalation goes. We'll talk about that in segment 3. This is Radio Free Redoubt. Stay right there.
Did you know that when the Declaration of Independence and later the U.S. Constitution was being drafted, those on the committee were sequestered away, along with their work, from the public eye until they were done? This was also the case with many of the states when drafting their respective constitutions. I've heard that there have been some inquiries from many of you on social media asking, what is in the proposed State of Liberty Constitution? When will it be done? Why is it being drafted in secret? Most Americans have forgotten their own history and heritage and don't realize this procedure has historical precedence. There's nothing secret about Liberty State Constitution. It's being drafted, debated, and reworked by the Constitution Drafting Committee and simply isn't ready to be presented. So some are asking, when can we see it? The committee recently announced that it believes their draft proposal will be available in February of 2019. But remember, although a lot of work has gone into it so far, we all know it is just that, a proposal. It will by no means be the final draft. The proposed Liberty State Constitution will be presented to delegates from each county. Delegates chosen by the citizens of each county to represent them, where they will be able to review, discuss, debate, amend, and make alterations as they see fit. This is the exciting part. This is where we'll finally have true representation when it comes to determining the supreme law of the land in the state we're contending for and in which we will live, Liberty State. So for now, for those asking about the Constitution, just know that it is being worked on right now. There are many other things that must be done to ensure our success. Instead of asking what someone else is working on, I encourage you to ask, what can I do to help this effort? The best thing you could do to help us right now would be to contact us at libertystate.org and let us know that you want to join in with the volunteers in your county and help them spread the word and bring in more volunteers at your county level. Another way to help is to email us with a list of 3 well-articulated grievances that you think absolutely must be addressed to protect your freedoms and restrict government overreach. Email those grievances to us by going to libertystate.org and clicking on the Contact tab. So plan to join in on this awesome effort today by volunteering or by donating to the Liberty State effort and make a difference that will actually count. I'm Lady Liberty, and this is a public service announcement on behalf of Liberty State. Visit us at libertystate.org today.
When a person desires respectability of people more than they stand in awe and fear of God, they sell out.
This is segment 3 at Radio Free Redoubt. Segment 3 is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design, designs to help keep you safe and help you thrive on your property, whether it's securing water rights or setting up your property with food supply in mind, water access, energy production, security features, all of these crucial features for a long-term viability on your retreat or your homestead, your property. And also, if you are looking for property and haven't even purchased yet, you want some expert advice. It's another service that they offer look at pre-purchase advice as well. So check them out at strategiclandscapedesign.com. There's a website. I really like their stuff, Zero Hedge, zerohedge.com. Well, this guy over there, Tyler Durden, he writes a piece and it caught my attention. Of course, several of you sent this to me as well. California Democrat threatens nukes if Americans don't hand over their guns. I thought, of course, he starts off, well, that escalated quickly, I'll say. But yeah, this is interesting where their minds are going. So just days after taking back the House, a Democratic congressman has proposed outlawing quote-unquote military-style semi-automatic assault weapons and forcing existing owners to sell their weapons or face prosecution. In a USA Today op-ed entitled Ban Assault Weapons, Buy Them Back, Go After Resistors, Representative Eric Swalwell, Democrat, California, the People's Democratic Republic of, argued this last week that prior, or maybe it was last week, anyway, he argued that prior proposals to ban assault weapons would leave millions of assault weapons in our communities for decades to come. What he's talking about there is grandfather clauses. You look, you can't import these into our state anymore, but if you already own one, you can keep it, just no more, right? He's saying, enough of that. 30-round magazines, they're banned, can't sell them anymore. Well, if you got them, you got to give them up, or they're going to be confiscated. So he proposes that the government should offer up to $1,000 for every weapon covered by a new ban, estimating that it would take $15 billion to buy back roughly 15 million weapons and criminally prosecute any who choose to defy the buyback by keeping their weapons. And as NBC News reports, this is a major departure from prior gun control proposals that typically exempt existing firearms, as in the past, Democrats and gun safety groups have carefully resisted proposals that could be interpreted as gun confiscation. So, anyway, this turns into a little tit for tat, because this guy writes on there, he says, make no mistake, Democrats want to eradicate the Second Amendment, ban and seize all guns, and have the power rest with the state, or all the power rest with the state. If these people are dangerously obsessed with power. So they get into this back and forth. And this one guy says, he says, Swalwell wants a war because that's what you would get. You're out of your blanking mind if you think I'll give up my rights and give the government all the power. This is what this these people are posting on this, I think it was Twitter. They were having this discussion with the author, this representative Swalwell. So Representative Swalwell responds, and it would be a short war, my friend. The government has nukes, too many of them, but they're legit. I'm sure if we talked, we could find common ground to protect our families and communities. So we're going to disarm you. If you refuse, we're going to nuke you. But hey, let's find some common ground here, right? So now all of a sudden he goes into a reasonable mode. There is no common ground with disarming citizens, free citizens who are law abiding. And now you've got nukes, huh? So this is what's interesting. It reminds me of the book, When the Almond Tree Blossoms. Now, if you guys haven't read this, it is an outstanding novel by David Akeman. Now, David Akeman is a journalist and a Christian and a patriot. He predicted this in a book, and we'll post a link to it. I strongly recommend it. I always have. It's a fast read. I wish there was a sequel to it or two that would have made a great trilogy, because where it ended was just right where, my gosh, I want to see what's going to happen next. Very well done. So I'll just read this to you. It's 1998 in this alternative timeline. The U.S. is controlled by a radical collectivist regime bent on maintaining control despite a growing nuclear threat from the resistance. Douglas Richfield supported the People's Movement. So he's got these two different groups, the People's Movement and the Constitutionalists. Now, this was written in, I think, 92. Back in 1992, he writes this, looking into the future about our country going into essentially a civil war. But this is what happened. This is what's interesting. The constitutionalists are putting up such a fight that the People's Movement, the leftists, the Marxists, the Democrats, they want to use tactical nukes on the strongholds of patriots called the constitutionalists in where else? Appalachia and the Rocky Mountains, the American Redoubt, all the way down through Arizona. Basically, all of the patriot. There's a map in the front of the book, and it's accurate. It accurately portrays the patriot strongholds. Well, in the story, the People's Movement leaders, the people who took over the government, essentially, this would be like the government being ran by, you know, a bunch of Hillary's and the previous president who will not be named, and all these others, right? Having operational control of our entire government. So the constitutionalists are putting up such a resistance. They decide we can only use we have to use nukes. Well, there's a checkmate here in the story. There's a plan called the Almond Tree Project, and that is for if our government's ever taken over or by a coup or a hostile government or overturned from within unlawfully, all of our nuclear subs go dark. And there's multiple secret bases around the world. It's called the Almond Tree Project or the Almond Project. And there's actually a scripture, when the almond tree blossoms, you know that war is about ready to break out, because they always took the winters off. So when springtime comes, the armies would start amassing again to pick up the campaign where they left off. So when the almond tree blossoms, it's springtime. It's time for everybody to, the troops to start to rally. So hence the name of the book. Anyway, so all these nuclear submarines, they go dark. So if the people's movement, and of course they're more constitutionally oriented minded, so they know if the people's movement uses tactical nukes on the constitutionalists, there will be a counterstrike by these nuclear submarines that went dark as soon as our government was overthrown, and would retaliate. So they can't use these nukes. So the race is on by the people's movement to track down and locate these subs and destroy them so they can't counterstrike. Then they're free and open to use nukes on the constitutionalists. That's the story in a nutshell. And it's a really good story. And it ties in a whole bunch of really cool stuff. Israel, you know, moving Jews that are trying to get relocated back to Israel. And, you know, there's the love story woven through it and everything else. Just is very well-rounded story. But it's interesting that now that we've got actually the first person to actually say, if you won't give up your guns, we got nukes. Responding to somebody saying that they will resist efforts by the government to collect all the power to itself by disarming the people. So things are changing. There could be some almond blossoms budding on our horizon. Isn't that interesting? And it's the Democrats that are driving this. Democrats are driving this. There's one thing I'll leave you with, and we'll take a break. Then I'm going to talk about Thanksgiving. We do have so much to be thankful for. But this is a comment to a recent article in the Tennessee Star. And talking about the Democrats. They have been the cause of so many of our problems, always claiming that they're the solution, but it's always disastrous. Look at our cities. New York City was just in gridlock. Children were staying on buses. Children couldn't get home till midnight, or they had to stay the night by getting buses turned back around and headed back to the schools where the kids had to sleep all night, and parents didn't know where their kids were. Democratically ran city, they're a wreck. They are, they're a mess. Crime is through the roof. Their policies are failures, expensive. Cities are going bankrupt. So, in a recent speech at Dartmouth, David Horowitz provided this response to those students and faculty who accused him of being a racist. He says, "I am an anti-racist. I marched in my first civil rights demonstration in 1948, before your parents were born, and have spent my life in politics championing the cause of inner-city blacks who suffer under the boot heel of the Democratic Party. Every major inner city in America is 100% controlled by the Democratic Party, and has been for 50 to 100 years. Every killing field, every school system that doesn't teach black kids in the inner cities to read and write so they'll never get a shot at the American dream is 100% controlled by the Democratic Party. Every inner city deprivation and injustice that policy can affect, Democrats are 100% responsible for." Is that the truth or what? It's the evidence is before our eyes. And they want to disarm us now because we see what disarming the citizens in all these major cities has done for those citizens. It's made them helpless to protect ourselves against the crime that is sure to follow. We'll be right back.
Hello, BBC. This is Chester Wilmot speaking from Field Marshal Montgomery's headquarters. The German bridgehead west of the Rhine, opposite Basel, has been wiped out. Yesterday afternoon, three columns of Canadian, British, and American troops broke through the last German defenses 5 miles southwest of Basel and reached the western end of the two bridges which the Germans had blown yesterday morning. The end was sudden and swift. On Friday evening, the Germans were still resisting strongly, holding a line across the neck of the bend on which Basel stands. But during the night, they evidently withdrew the bulk of their forces, and when Montgomery's troops attacked yesterday morning, they found little more than rearguard parties covering roadblocks. During the day, the Germans were driven back more than 5 miles, and in the evening, British infantry of the 1st Canadian Army linked up with 9th Army troops opposite Basel. This means that the Allied armies now control the west bank of the Rhine from Arnhem to Endenach, 4 miles north of Koblenz. Though there may still be a few German stragglers at odd points along the west bank, and one pocket in an old fort upstream from Basel had not been fully cleaned up last night. The 21st Army Group began its drive to the Rhine 33 days ago. In that time, it's captured more than 50,000 prisoners. Of these, 29,000 have been taken by the 9th Army and 21,000 by the British and Canadians. In that time, Montgomery's forces have driven the Germans back between 12 and 25 miles along a 60-mile front.
This is the fourth and final segment here at Radio Free Redoubt, and segment four is brought to you by Works Holsters, made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. Go to works.com for more, W-E-R-K-Z.com. All right, now, this is the Thanksgiving segment, and we do have so much to be thankful for. I'm thankful for, and I mentioned this yesterday, I'm thankful for my wall builder's Bible, the founder's Bible. And this one's signed by David Barton. I even read that yesterday on the air, but it's Thanksgiving. Of course, they have stuff just peppered all through here. It's just chock full of examples about our American heritage and our Christian heritage and the founding of our country and everything else. So this one is out of James, and it's a response to James 1:17, which says, every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above. Well, right next to that, they've got a quote by James Madison, the fourth president of the United States. And he wrote this in his 1815 Thanksgiving Day proclamation. And this is what President Madison said. No people ought to feel greater obligations to celebrate the goodness of the great disposer of events of the destiny of nations than the people of the United States. And to the same divine author of every good and perfect gift, we are indebted for all those privileges and advantages, religious as well as civil, which are so richly enjoyed in this favored land. And that's out of the Founder's Bible. But I want to go to a couple of other things from Wall Builders about Thanksgiving and share those with you. Now, I found some great resources. First of all, pastors, if you are looking for something to cover, I know it's Sunday, Thanksgiving's coming up, but you can always do this next Thursday. And a lot of people are having Wednesday night services coming up, and people want to hear about Thanksgiving. Oh, you don't know my congregation. Well, I don't know. Maybe you want to reconsider. Let me pull this up here. A new study shows that your church members want you to preach a sermon on our Christian history and heritage, and Thanksgiving is a perfect time for this. A recent study by Christian pollster George Barna showed that 79% of church members said that they wanted their pastor to do sermons on Christian heritage, the role of faith in American history, and its modern-day relevance. Thanksgiving presents a wonderful opportunity to teach the Bible and also show its influence in American history, and that lessons from our history still have modern day relevance. Below are some resources to help you prepare such a sermon this Thanksgiving. I'm going to put this in the highlights and resources posting, but if you don't want to wait, don't wait. Go to wallbuilders.com/Thanksgiving/. Wallbuilders.com/Thanksgiving. And there are a ton of sermon outlines and resources and PowerPoint presentations historical documents, everything that you'd ever want to know about Thanksgiving and how to incorporate that into a sermon. Awesome stuff. So people need to hear it. They need to hear it from the pulpit. The pulpit cannot be silent on this. But I want to share with you something. This happy Thanksgiving. This week, we celebrate a uniquely American holiday, Thanksgiving. I want to read this article to you. And this was posted, I believe this was in November, 2011. So I'm pulling this forward from the archives at wallbuilders.com. While Thanksgiving celebrations occurred in North America as early as 1541, our current celebration is generally modeled after the one at Plymouth, Massachusetts. May it rest in peace. In 1621, Massachusetts is heavily occupied territory now, sadly. The Pilgrims, having survived their first winter, during which about half of them died, invited their local Indian friends to join with them in several days of religious activities, feasting, and athletic competition. Thanksgiving became a festival celebrated annually across New England, but did not spread to all the colonies until the American Revolution, when the Continental Congress called for official days of Thanksgiving and prayer. So much for separation of church and state, right? The first federal Thanksgiving proclamation was issued by President George Washington in 1789. Why would he issue that proclamation? Well, he explained, "It is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor." Over the next 80 years, national Thanksgiving celebrations occurred only sporadically, although they were still celebrated annually across New England, which is now New Europe. Beginning in the 1840s, Sarah Hale, a mother of five children and an editor of Godey's Lady's Book, persistently campaigned for an established national Thanksgiving, such as in this editorial from 1852, where she writes, "The American people have two peculiar festivals, each connected with their history, and therefore of great importance in giving power and distinctness to their nationality. The 4th of July is the exponent of independence and civil freedom. Thanksgiving Day is the national pledge of Christian faith in God, acknowledging Him as the dispenser of blessings. These two festivals should be joyfully and universally observed throughout our whole country and thus incorporated in our habits of thought as inseparable from American life." Amen. Now, she faithfully contacted various presidents with that request. Finally, in 1863, President Abraham Lincoln issued a national Thanksgiving proclamation in response to her letter to him. Subsequent presidents followed Lincoln's example in setting aside a day of Thanksgiving, but it was not until 1941 that Congress passed a law establishing Thanksgiving as an official national holiday to be celebrated every year on the fourth Thursday in November. As you celebrate Thanksgiving this year with your family and friends, take time to reflect on all the reasons you have to be truly thankful. Take time to thank God and specifically recall to Him some of His many blessings on us. You might even outline your prayer to Him by the four items George Washington mentioned in America's original federal Thanksgiving proclamation. There's four of them. I'll read them to you. One, acknowledge the providence of Almighty God. Two, obey His will. Three, be grateful for His benefits. And four, humbly implore His protection and favor. You can also share with others the history of and the reason for this great holiday. There are several resources on the website at wallbuilders.com that you can find helpful. And we'll link this article to you in our highlights and resources posting. Or you can just go to wallbuilders.com and from their library, the drop-down tab, select Thanksgiving down toward the bottom, and you'll find this. It's happy-thanksgiving-3 at wallbuilders.com. They have several great resources here. See Thanksgiving proclamations issued by the Continental Congress of several different years. Learn more about the history of this holiday and search their website for more articles, including Celebrating Thanksgiving in America. And three, read the 1795 Thanksgiving Sermon by the Reverend Thomas Baldwin in response to George Washington's call for a day of Thanksgiving. So anyway, with that, from all of us here at Radio Free Redoubt, all of the partisans across the free zones that are helping us to stay on the air, to do what we're work behind the scenes, I wish all of you a blessed week and a happy Thanksgiving, and all of you outside the wire in occupied territory or in the other free zones, wherever you may be, I want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving as well. Travel safe and Godspeed. And we'll talk to you next week. If I'm not able to, then you're going to get to hear this again next Sunday. I'll see what I can do, but I can't promise anything. But until we meet again, be thankful and stay strong. Be of good courage. Pray for humility, courage, wisdom, and discernment. This is John Jacob Schmidt. And if you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, my name is your name too. Good night.